Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. We're thrilled to be with you today from the 2024 Environmental Permitting Summer School in Marco Island. I'm Ryan Matthews, and I'm joined by my co-host, Brett Cyphers. If you like what you hear, and by now we sure hope you do, and want to support the show, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you or your colleagues have an idea for a future Specifier Podcast recording, please don't hesitate to reach out to Brett or myself to discuss further. We'd love to have you on.
And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Florida Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com. The Specifier and its website are improving by leaps and bounds every day, so go check it out and follow along with the future changes. The subscriptions and ratings truly make a difference, and we think you'll really enjoy the ways you can read, watch, listen, and learn from the Florida Specifier right at your fingertips.
As always, thanks for your support. It has been tremendous. Well, Brett, we're wrapping up our time here in Marco Island. Seems like it has flown by, and simultaneously it has not as well.
Right.
I hope you've gotten a decent amount of work done and actually been able to enjoy a drink with an umbrella by the pool as well.
Not by the pool yet. Umbrellas, I won't admit to anything, but had a few. Actually, I guess I just admitted to it then. No, it's been great, and it's great to spend the last day here, official day, at Marco Island with you. You and Jeff really put on a good show, you know, with your partners at the chamber, and so really enjoy being here every time, and I've enjoyed recording down here with you quite a bit this time.
Yeah, it seems like we have doubled the recordings we've done this year. I'm sure 2025 has a strong workload in front of us in terms of recording next year.
We can make summer school 2 weeks, and I don't think we'll be able to fit them all in. It's going to be crazy. People really enjoyed them, and I think you and I, if I speak for you as well, enjoyed it as well. I like it.
I hope so. Everybody except for Steverson, probably.
Right, obviously.
Well, I mean, it is my family's favorite trip of the year. It's unfortunate today is our last full day, which usually means maybe some jet skiing, sitting by the pool and the ocean, and definitely my annual Miami Vice. Today is extra special. I've got someone that I have known for a vast majority of my life on the show. I think he's surprised to be here, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you've known our guest today for more than 30 years, dating back to apparently your freshman year of high school. I am absolutely certain he has some stories he'd like to share.
I'm sure he does, but that's not why he's here, thankfully. We're going to instead focus on the success that he's had professionally since we did, in fact, go to high school together. We lived together in college, and he was the best man at my wedding.
Wow, that's great. Hopefully, just to beat that dead horse, hopefully something will spill out while we're talking here. But to get to that guest and best man, we've got Spencer Toole with us today with Gulf Coast Underground, which is headquartered in Mobile, Alabama. GCU is a full-service general construction and engineering firm specializing in the rehabilitation and replacement of municipal infrastructure, both water and wastewater lines. Spencer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. Certainly a pleasure, and as Ryan alluded to, definitely surprised to be here. As for the stories about Ryan, probably better told with a video or a picture, but fortunately for both of us, cell phones were not that prevalent back in our day in college and high school. I think we might have dodged a little bullet there. Yeah, so needless to say, I think we're probably all better off because of that. So, you know, as to the question at hand about getting into the water and wastewater business and how we kind of do business at GCU, you know, growing up, it was always one of those things that people told me, hey, you know, you're really good at math and science. You ought to become an engineer. Had no idea what that meant, really. You know, maybe they drive trains, right? I do have a few family members that are engineers, so I wasn't that naive. But getting to UF, beginning school there, I knew that I enjoyed business, I enjoyed construction, and I was told I was good at engineering, potentially. So I figured engineering would be a great path for me, and I figured that, you know, with engineering, I could go on, I could get licensed. Whereas if I went to, you know, the building construction school or business school, there was not a path for licensure there. So I proceeded with engineering, got my undergrad and grad degrees in civil. And I promise you, you know, if I've told this story 1,000 times, the least favorite class I had at UF was probably my water and wastewater class. Probably hard to believe sitting here talking about water and wastewater challenges that we're all trying to tackle here, certainly in the state of Florida. That was my least favorite. I told everybody I was never going to work in the water and wastewater space. And so then I graduated. I began working for a design build firm naturally in the water and wastewater space, doing a little bit more structural design and construction work. And so it kind of had that avenue for my, you know, my passion for construction and
design build. Where was that, Spencer?
That was in Gainesville.
Okay.
Yep. That firm, though, was really more focused on work behind the fences of the water plants, the wastewater plants, and less in distribution, less in collections. Traveling across Louisiana and Mississippi, which became my territory ultimately once I became an area manager at that firm, I remember working on some big work. It was EPA consent mandated work out in Baton Rouge. And we were building some large EQ storage tanks at a wastewater facility there to store inflow and infiltration to prevent SSOs into the Mississippi River. And as I left the wastewater plant there, I rounded a corner and there was a manhole spilling out sewer into the street, right?
So they're spending pleasant side.
Yeah. So I know why the EPA showed up, right? But ultimately, it just kind of got me thinking that inside the fences of the plants, we're only able to add capacity, but the problem really existed out in the collection systems. And that's what led me to Gulf Coast Underground and where I am today and the work that we do in the trenchless space in sanitary sewer systems.
Yeah, and you mentioned Louisiana, Alabama, I think Mississippi as well. Tell me about, because I'm a Florida guy, I always love Florida. Tell me about some of the work that you may be doing now in Florida that we might be familiar with.
Yeah, so we are headquartered in Mobile, as you mentioned, but Florida's always been a primary focus. Obviously, I grew up in Tallahassee, went to school at Florida, you know, third or fourth generation Floridian myself. But when I moved out to Mobile and partnered up with Chris, who is my business partner, to begin to grow this business, he had dabbled a little bit in the Florida Panhandle work. I mean, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, those states were kind of our strong points. It's difficult to sit there and ignore the large market that exists, though, in Florida. And it was my short-term goal was to secure the markets where we were already successful.
Sure.
Begin to get into the Florida Panhandle where I had some good relationships and where I thought we could do well. And then 5 to 10 year goal was always to break into Central Florida, South Florida, and be able to cover the entire state. So it was about 5 or 6 years ago that we actually began to procure more and more of that work in North Central Florida, Northeast Florida, and then even up along the I-4 corridor there. And we actually decided to set up shop in Gainesville, a great location and a lot of familiarity with the area, obviously. So since then, we've got a yard there. We've got an office space there. We also have a small little satellite office in the Tampa area and beginning to do big work further and further down in the state. So very excited about the opportunities that exist. I've heard about it all week here at the conference about the economy that is the state of Florida. Or the nation of Florida, if you will. And so we're real excited about what those growth opportunities are going to do for Gulf Coast Underground.
Well, first and foremost, go Noles. But I want you to get into first, I mean, we're going to want to talk a little bit about the design build methodology, right? But also, I think it's important for folks to know what trenchless rehab is and what GCU really does, because the process in and of itself is actually pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so I know every time I say trenchless rehab, usually people sit there and say, oh, trenches. I'm like, no. Trenchless. We're trying not to dig. And that's really the premise behind it all, is that we all know there's no secret. The infrastructure in this country is aging, and every day it gets older, right? And it's not self-healing. And so if you have pipelines that have been in the ground for 70, 80, 90 years, they have long exceeded their useful life. Their original design life typically is around 50 years, right? So so every day we get further and further behind the curve of catching up with our infrastructure needs. Now, there's the option of going and digging everything up and replacing it, which obviously if money were no factor, if the impacts of the surrounding areas were no factor, that would be a great long-term solution. You could put in brand new pipe and start new, right? Or, you know, I always equate it to a home, right? If you have the option of going and building a brand new 2022 home, fantastic. But if you have a 1970s, 1960s home like I do, you know, you're going to be doing some rehab, right? And so the trenchless space, what we're doing there is we're actually able to go in and line these pipelines without having to do any digging. So we run robotic cameras through the pipes, through mainline sewers, through lateral sewers, through storm drains. We assess the condition of the pipeline as it currently sits, clean those lines, and then we can actually install a liner, which once cured will take the place of the host pipe structurally. And we can do that on pipes from sizes 4-inch all the way up to 108-inch, We can line lateral lines that come off of mains, so we have ways to go in through the main and then shoot another liner up in a different direction. Mm-hmm. Pretty neat technologies and certainly a good little niche and nothing I learned about in school.
So I was at Northwest Florida Water Management District for 10 years. Part of that time was during the pandemic, and we experienced a lot of times where you had a lot of supply chain issues. People were having a hard time getting metal, had a hard time getting concrete, hard time getting especially plastic and PVC for pipes when they're doing replacement, septic to sewer projects, things like that. I'm curious for you, whether during the pandemic or post-pandemic, were there any changes to the industry that you saw in the work, the kind of specialized work that you do and how you do business? I mean, in terms of those supply chain issues or even workforce issues, because obviously everyone had those as well.
Yeah, so the pandemic was definitely an eye-opener, I think, for everybody, to say the least. In our industry, honestly, the good that came out of it was we realized, and so did society, we're doing necessary work, right? We are, I guess they were calling them essential workers. So we would actually deploy our workforce to go to a utility, and in some cases, they would actually give our folks a letter that said, you know, hey, we are essential workers. If anybody approaches you and says, what are you doing working in this area? Please present this. So as it pertains to the workforce side of things, it kind of gave some credence to what we're doing. And it kind of it steered people that maybe otherwise would not have even explored our industry for potential work to go, you know, gosh, well, I got laid off at my other job. These guys are still out here working. And so that's something that even today, when we're talking to new potential hires, we can hang our hat on, which is we've never had a layoff. We've never had a downturn. You know, there's always work to be done in the water and wastewater industry. It's not cyclical like the commercial and residential and all that stuff. So we feel really good about that. As it pertains to supply chain, we did have some hiccups early on with getting resins and things of that nature, which, you know, you mentioned PVC pipe, and the resins that we use for our cured CIPP systems are similar and from same manufacturer, whatnot. Availability was difficult for about 2 or 3 months. Of course, the pricing doubled overnight.
Right. That was the big one, yeah.
That was the big kicker. We had some clients that looked at that price increase and said, hey, we don't expect you to come and do work for free and show us what you bid the project with price-wise for your materials and show us where you're at now and we'll make sure you're whole. And those are clients for life, right?
Right.
We also had some that said, you signed the contract and I'm sorry. So as far as lessons learned in the pandemic, you know, we did learn a lot about people. We learned a lot about people's approach to business, who you want to work for, making sure that you're aligning yourself with people that have similar culture and values to yourself. And then for our materials, we said, look, we can no longer have a single supplier of anything. Mm. You know, we need to have multiple suppliers. We need to have relationships with all those suppliers so that if, availability becomes an issue again, we have other avenues for maybe procuring those products.
Since you're rapidly expanding in the Southeast region, I mean, have you found the Florida marketplace any different? I mean, I can imagine only that Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and even Florida, I mean, their tendencies could lean towards sort of a good old boy network in some places, right? But I mean, being involved in 5-6 states, are there any vast differences to Florida than other states?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the money and the tax base that exists here and the number of projects and the size of those projects, probably the thing that I see that separates Florida from the other, we're actually in 10 states now, which is hard to believe, but the thing that separates Florida from those others and certainly kind of that Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana area that, you know, is right in our backyard there in Mobile, is really procurement. So they have a very pro-business approach to their procurement. And it's a very logical approach. So they allow things like design build for water and wastewater projects. You mentioned that earlier, Ryan. And they also allow for piggybacking of existing contracts that you might have with other state entities. And what that does is it really streamlines the process for procurement and doesn't kick these projects down the road a year and a half. I remember in a state I won't mention getting a note from the environmental management group's lead engineers, and they were talking about the money that had just come into the state through some of the infrastructure bill spending. And they were concerned they weren't going to be able to spend it in the time frame that they had to spend it, right? Mm-hmm. But that is because they had to go through this long drawn out process of, okay, we have to hire an engineer. Now we need to go and design the project. Now we need to go and advertise the project. Okay, now we need to go and take another 60, 90 days to award the project. And, you know, by the time it's all said and done, those funds were allocated and it's 2 or 3 years before you're actually breaking ground on anything, right? Whereas in Florida, if you go and you select a team based on qualifications and you're selecting your contractor and your engineer through a design build contract, it allows you to fast track that process. So you can be out there doing all the evaluation work of your sanitary sewer collection system or your storm system. At the same time, your engineer is sitting there working on the design. And then simultaneously to that, the engineer that's working on the design is talking to you as the contractor for constructability questions. Everything is just, it's much more streamlined. And then when you get to the end, it winds up with not only a faster delivery of the project, but historically it shows that you're going to wind up with lower costs because you've got that early contractor involvement, because you know you're not going to have those change orders that everybody talks about when you haphazardly put a project together.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, in talking about the procurement side, it's like in the tools are there to make it faster. I mean, some people still choose to make it slower, but that's life in government sometimes. But in terms of that, the procurement delivery, there's also the idea of dealing, for me, it's dealing with the client themselves. And for me, it was the local governments. If you're looking at from, and I always, you know, like a broken record, go back to North Florida. But those were the, you know, 11 of our 16 counties were small disadvantaged, you know, considered, you know, by statute. And so we take a particular interest in how to move them forward, how to move them forward quickly, because the way that, and Ryan deals with this as well, like the way that the state deals with appropriating dollars nowadays, the point at which they appropriate those dollars and the point at which they expect an outcome from those dollars is really fast. But when you look at places that aren't as sophisticated as some of these larger places like, you know, the Miamis and the Tampas and the Orlandos of the world, things can be hard. And so I'm wondering, in the sense of working with these more rural communities, even the smaller mid-sized ones, how can you help them come in and improve that infrastructure? Because some of it is, as you said, you know, earlier, it's really old, you know, becomes, you know, a bit decrepit. They've got new responsibilities, you know, from Florida statute perspective. How can you come in and help them figure out how to do not just a fast solution, but one that may be more financially palatable given those constraints there?
Yeah, no, good questions. And we see that all the time. And one of the ways that we've actually grown our business is through those smaller utilities and municipalities. In fact, to get into the cured in place business, you know, it's something that requires quite a bit of capital. It's something that most specifications say you've got to have 1 million feet of experience before you can come put 1 foot into my system, right? Well, we were getting calls all the time from folks there in the panhandle primarily that were saying, hey, I've got 2 line segments to line. Can you find somebody to come and do it? I would call the big publicly traded companies and they would all say, man, I can't go down there for 2 line segments, right? Mm-hmm. And so they had a need, but they just didn't have anybody that could respond. And so that helped us fill that void. And the trenchless technologies in general are great for them because, again, you're going to be able to do it at a fraction of the cost of what it would cost them to go out there and do it the old-fashioned way, right, with a bunch of yellow iron and digging holes in the ground, right? Mm. So those things are great for the small utilities and municipalities. And then, you know, we kind of touched on the piggybacking thing. So, you know, the other thing that I loved about this business versus where I was before was, you know, everybody was a potential client. You might not have a stoplight in your town, but you have toilets that flush and you have a sewer system to some degree, right? So most every place has a budget. It's a varying sizes, but they have a budget and they're going to spend a little bit of money on operating and maintaining their systems every year. And if it's $25,000 is what they have, piggybacking allows you to go out there and find a company like ours and say, hey, look, I've got 25 grand, here are my needs, you know, what can we get done for this? And maybe we'll try to get the second thing on the list done next year. And no longer becomes about, hey, if it's less than $5 million, I can't go, right? You know, we've always had that approach to our business and we understand the relationship side of it too. And so that's really how you help the smaller towns. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, we see exactly what you're talking about and feel like we've tried to address that throughout our entire business life here.
That's great to hear. Spencer, if folks want to get in touch with you to find out more about how GCU can help them, how do they do that?
Best way is my cell. My wife might not approve of it always being on me, but it's always on me.
Fair enough. Okay.
So my cell phone is always on, but that number is 251-472-6684. Also, email is always great too, and that's stuellgogcu.com.
Well, we'll have all that on the episode notes for those of you out there that don't have a pen in your hand while Spencer was talking.
Absolutely. Spencer, thanks so much for the work you do, not only for our communities, but also sharing a little bit of time with us today. There's a lot more that I'd like to discuss, but I don't think that's healthy or safe for either you or me. So I think we're going to have to wrap it up there.
Yeah. And on that note, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier podcast. A special thank you goes out to Bagels and Biscuits, who were kind enough to let us use their music for the show. Check them out wherever you get your music.
And if you have an idea for an article for the Florida Specifier or a topic for this podcast, please be sure to let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next time as we continue to delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Brett Cyphers, I'm Ryan Matthews. We'll see you next time.